Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, welcome to another remote Rahalastapa. This week we have the wonderful Michael Spicer, who you may have seen in the internet sensation, The Room Next Door. Absolutely brilliant guy, and I've acted with him sometimes, and I've known him for a long time, and he's a very funny man, and this is a lovely interview, which we did remotely using the internet. This is the way it will be for a little while now. We've got lots more to come. We're recording these on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. You can watch them for free. That's right, you heard me, by going to twitch.tv/rkherring. So come along, there's lots of other stuff on that channel, including snooker, stone clearing, occasionally play games, and on Sunday nights we watch films and I commentate on them in an amusing manner. So come along and join in with that if you care to. You can subscribe there as well. You can pay money if you want, but you can also subscribe without spending any money if you're an Amazon Prime member, and we still get money from Ian Amazon. So have a look at that if you fancy it. Also, you can become a monthly badger. This is one of the things. You get this wonderful little plastic wallet saying, I'm one of the cool kids. You get a membership card. You get 2 badges. This is the gold version. You have to pay £5 a month for the gold version, £10 a month for the platinum version. But £3 a month will get you everything except the different coloured badges. And you get interviews. You get entered into a prize draw. You get backstage surprises. You get emails telling you who the guests are going to be ahead of other people. The non-badge scum, and all the money goes just gets fed back into making more podcasts. So it's a win-win situation. If you've enjoyed all this output and would like to give us something back, please feel free to do that. Just by listening to the podcast with the adverts, you are making a contribution, so thank you for that. And if you can't afford to pay anything, and do not feel guilty about not paying. Let the rich pay and let the poor listen for free. That is my creed. That is my motto, my fine friend. That is how the whole world should be. But it is how my world is. Rahalastapa will always remain free so that everyone can listen, but most people choose not to in any case. What a load of fucking idiots. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Michael Spicer, my fine friends. Hello, welcome back to my loft. Love to see you all here. Thank you for coming along. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lonely Self-Isolating Twat Podcast. That's me. That was hanging around in Joe Wick's lounge the other day. I was hiding just to one side of the fireplace. He said, "What are you doing in here? You meant to be self-isolating." I said, "Get out, shut up." He said he calls it Rahalastapa anyway. Not doing as well as me. I've got 313 viewers at this exact second. How many has Joe Wicks got in the morning? Not that many. That's what I'm thinking. What's been going on? It's sort of the reality. For people listening to the podcast in the future of June, if there are any humans still alive then, this is April, 15th of April. This is being recorded. We're 3 weeks and a bit into lockdown. It's starting to feel real. It's starting to feel like we might all go mad and there's no end in sight. It sort of feels like being under house arrest. And my theory is, however long we're imprisoned in our homes during this lockdown, the government, as a reward, should allow us to commit one crime equivalent to that jail term and get no punishment because we've already served our time. Who's with me on that? I don't know what you can get for 3 weeks. I think maybe you could punch someone if it's a first offence, a bit of shoplifting, probably that would be fine. But you have to do it before the lockdown. And to make it interesting, it's up to you when you cash your time in. But if you leave it until the lockdown is announced, you get nothing. So you've got to try and cash in before the lockdown ends. So you could go for 3 weeks, but what if you could have got 6 weeks? And imagine what you could have probably waved your willy at someone for free and not got into any trouble if you'd waited 6 weeks. So look out for that. But only if you've got the balls and ovaries to stick it out that long. And you must commit the crime after you've pressed your buzzer as well. That you can't do the crime and then get the punishment. You've got to do it after. It's a good game show. I think we'll enjoy it. I've been quite depressed this week. I'm very sad to hear about the death of Tim Brooke Taylor, a former guest on Rahalastapa. Fantastic man, a lovely man, and I hope he knew how appreciated he was and how much of a comedy legend he was, certainly to people of my generation, but utterly depressed by it. So God knows how Graham Garden and Tim Bill Oddie are feeling about this. Just thank you, Tim, for all the laughs, and thank you for the goodies and everything you did since then. And thank you very much. It was such an honor and a pleasure to meet him last year. If you enjoy these podcasts and these Twitch streams, remember you can subscribe. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can subscribe every month. Give us £5 or $5 every single month at no cost to yourself. If you go to my YouTube channel, you can find out how to do that. But it's basically just linking your accounts and subscribing. So thank you to all the people who've done that. We've got 5,796 followers at the moment. They haven't all paid any money. You can pay some money just if you want. But all that money will go into making more podcasts, and some of it will go towards the Just Giving campaign for comedians who are out of work at the moment, had all their work cut off, Heckle the Virus, which you can also donate directly to if you feel what we're doing here is worth some money. Right, let's crack on with the show. I think that would be nice. My guest this week, he's probably best known for his performance in The Last 7 Days of Quant. That's why we're all here today. Alongside young Richard Herring was also in that short film. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, I'll have to remember to turn him on. It's Michael Spicer. There he is. Look at that. My goodness.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good.
We've been talking for half an hour.
We have been talking for half an hour anyway.
We'll go over some of the same ground. Do you remember The Last 7 Days of Quant?
Yeah, because that was the first time that I met a famous person, which was you.
Right. Blimey. I felt quite intimidated to be my memories of that. I think I'd been at my grandparents, must have been my grandmother's house. I think everyone else was dead by then. in Middlesbrough. Something had been happening in Middlesbrough, and then I'd driven down. It might have been my uncle's 50th wedding anniversary or something. I had to drive down somewhere in the Midlands. Yeah. Where was it?
It was in Wolverhampton. Yeah, we filmed it in Wolverhampton.
Horrible place.
It wasn't nice, no.
No.
And I got funding to make a short film with some people that were based in Wolverhampton. So I made this very strange, quirky film. And they said, we've asked Richard Herring to play the doctor in the film. And I was, I was a bit of a fanboy back then. Oh, good. That's nice. And, so it was very unusual.
It was. I didn't really understand what was. Well, I didn't understand what was going on in the film. Really, I have to say.
No, I think what had happened. This is the problem, Rich. is that I'd watched My Wrongs by Chris Morris.
Oh yes,
the short film. Yeah, and back at that time, I was making stuff that was blatantly ripping off other people. Chris Morris just around at the time, and I thought, I could do something quirky like that. And that's really what it was. And it didn't really come out the way we wanted it to. But short films, what short film do have any kind of impact on you and make any money and do anything for your career? None.
No, usually not. That is true. I've done two.
They're good at developing yourself as a filmmaker. That's all they're good at doing.
Well, I think what's interesting, well, you were obviously quite young. That was 18 years ago, so you must have been in your 20s.
23?
Yeah, so you're a very young man. I didn't know that. I thought, I came in and I never really get asked to do acting. In fact, you're probably the single person who's employed me as an actor more than any other in that I've done. I've done two short films over a 15-year period, which is not that. It's not enough to keep me in nappies.
No,
for myself.
Sterling performances in both, Richard.
Thank you. No, it was good. But I enjoyed doing it, and it was very nice to be asked. But I think that's what's interesting is that for a lot of people, you've sort of appeared in the last couple of years, and maybe the last year. The we'll talk about The Room Next Door, which obviously we'll talk about later, has sort of hit really big, but. That's 18 years ago that we did that short film, and you've been working pretty constantly since then. But largely, it seems in an interesting sort of self-funded and which most people don't do. Most people think, oh well, I'll try and get radio, I'll try and get on TV. Which I'm not saying you weren't trying to do those things as well, but you seemed to very early on make the decision. I'm just going to make my own content way before anyone else did.
Yeah, I think, right at the very beginning, I was like anyone else writing stuff. Because the thing is, we remember a time before the internet. So when I graduated and when I was just trying to get my head together about what I wanted to do, I was just writing scripts for films and sitcoms and just sending them through the channels at the BBC, I remember sending a sitcom about a guy who worked in a stationer's, and there was another guy who he quarrelled with, who lived above him, and he was more of a kind of modern art acrylic selling stuff. So they were kind of bickering the whole time. Anyway, it was a terrible idea and a terrible script. But I do remember sending it to LWT when I was about 17. I'd send jokes to Spitting Image as well, anything like that. And then eventually I realized that I wasn't getting anywhere with that, and that I would just, get a camcorder, which is what they were back then, big thing that you put on your shoulder, and then I just started making short films. And then I kind of, because of that, I was also developing my acting, because I just used to go, I'll put myself in it. That'll save time. That'll save money. I'll put myself in it. So I started learning how to act. So I didn't go to drama school or anything like that. So it's all very unorthodox route, really.
Yeah, but it's sort of ahead of its time. I mean, that's someone in the chat room was saying something along the lines of you were doing self-isolating comedy before we were self-isolated, which, again, yeah. we might talk about later. Yeah. But it is incredible to me. I think, you know, obviously, you just reminded me of one of the most embarrassing things I did in my year off when I was 18 to 19. And it was a year off before I went to, you know, I had a place at Oxford University Reds to go to. And I was trying to get a job, and it was difficult to get part-time, you know, just work for that period. And I wrote quite a long letter to the Terry Wogan Show saying, how about having a segment where, you know, I talk about how difficult it is to get work in Britain and trying to help people use job centres and, you know, because all the adverts say you need experience, but how do you get experience if you've never had a job? Just the idea of someone reading that at the Terry Wogan office makes me just cringe with embarrassment. Well, I hope they destroyed it.
The funny thing is that I wrote to Fist of Fun.
Did you?
Yeah, because you always used to have an address, didn't you?
I did, yeah, yeah.
So I took it upon myself to write to you. God knows what I said. I must have said something along the lines of, can I be in your gang? That was probably it, really. But I remember writing, actually, it's such a weird memory, but I remember writing that on my 21st birthday.
Did we write back? We usually wrote back.
No.
No?
No.
That's very unlucky. We spent a lot of time after each series. It was mainly me, and she would usually come in and sign the letters, but occasionally I had something on there.
Yeah.
I remember spending a solid month of replying to every single, like, paper letter we got.
Yeah.
There was a few emails then, which were a bit easier, but it was mainly paper letters.
Right. No, I mean, I don't hold it against you, Rich. Don't worry about it.
No, it's fine.
I was like a really old printer that went, so it was really faded. So you probably just got through half of it. I can't be bothered.
Piece of paper that I can't read. You need to hold it up to a light.
Yeah.
My wife's best friend used to write to us every like three times a week. When I met her, she's a comedian, and now she's not a comedian again. But when I first met her, I knew who she was because I recognised her name. Danielle Ward, the comedian, used to send stuff in because there was an art kind of thing to it as well. So a lot of people centered things for the gallery. So, but it's nice. Christina Martin, she's the same one who writes for Viz and stuff like that. She's, they were people who wrote to us, you know, they were crazy, like the people in this stream chat here, but they were, they turned out to be good eggs.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad. If you go to your YouTube channel, I mean, you can get a taste of the last maybe 10 years of you attempting to do
10 years.
Different things. And, you know, I dipped in because there's so much stuff there. And I've seen some of them before and some of them remembered and some I didn't.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a lot of, I mean, some very simple ideas. There's a single man on eHarmony, which dates it a little bit, which is a lovely... That's a lovely idea.
That was the first thing that I ever did that went viral on Twitter.
Is it? Okay. Right.
Because it was directly related to something else that went viral, which was a genuine woman saying that she really liked cats. And she couldn't she couldn't get through her profile without breaking down and saying how much she just said, I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about cats now and crying all the time. So I then went out on my lunch hour, did that very quickly, and came back and loaded it up, and it just went viral. That was the first time I'd ever experienced it. And then since then, it was found out that the woman doing the eHarmony was also parodying it.
Oh, really?
there was nothing genuine about that story at all.
Well, I quite like it then because it works. Like, I didn't know about that, and it works. It's very funny just as a surreal thing because you think, oh, a man doing an eHarmony, I can see where this sketch is going to go.
Yeah.
And then it's a man crying about his love for the Liberal Democrats, which you would not... And being upset about how they've all had to compromise. I mean, it's of its time.
It was of its time.
I think we've worked out what time period it was in. But it was actually quite funny just to chance across that one.
Yeah, yeah.
There's more recently, there's a very funny and much higher budget James Bond parody sort of thing you've done with James Bond in the modern world, having to deal with Facebook ads and memes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So working in an office, but very funny. Walls of Darkness, if you haven't seen that.
I'd see that.
So there's a fuck of a lot of stuff in there. So I think it would...
Dip into it. By all means, dip into it. That's my advice.
But it's called after the. It's actually not your name on the channel. It's the name of one of the first characters. The channel's named
one of the
after
first the characters that I never actually got going with in terms of developing anything for. I just thought I had this idea of an agony uncle, like a therapist, and I was writing a Radio 4 thing that was based around that, and I entered it into a competition and got to like the last 10 or whatever, but I've never known how to change my name. so I stuck with it now, so yeah, it's fine.
I like it. I sit there. So I'm looking through. We'll move on in a sec. I might ask you some merch questions in a sec.
Yeah.
I was looking through your IMDb page.
Yes.
And it claims that you were Fred West in Martina Coles's Lady Killers. That's very exciting. I didn't see it, so I'm surprised that I kind of thought maybe that's a different Michael Spicer.
No, that was me. No. Yeah.
So how that must be a big role.
No. How those horrible, salacious documentaries that occasionally cut away to terrible reconstructions?
Yeah.
That's the threat. So occasionally it would cut to me.
But you're the main one in it, right? I mean, that's... Did you punch the air when you got...
The main people in it are Martina Cole and all the victims.
Okay.
And occasionally it would cut to me in a kind of green shading for some reason. Of me driving around when I couldn't drive, smoking when I've never smoked, and picking up women, which I've never done as well. But it was really gruesome and horrible, and I really, really, really regret doing it. So thanks for bringing it up.
I'm going to bring it up. That's what I do. That's what my... I did it to Michael Palin. I talked about... You've Got Mail, which he was very upset for me to bring up because he got cut out of You've Got Mail.
He did.
Yeah. So he wasn't pleased for me bringing that up.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah. No, he was all right. He took it very well. He took it on the chin. Okay. Did you, were you glad when you got it before you're looking back at it, when you got the part of Fred West, did you go, yes?
I was absolutely overjoyed and I thought it would change my life. Because basically what had happened, because I was you know what it's like, Rich, you get very frustrated when projects don't take off. So you think, right, I'm going to get an acting agent and I'm going to start going to auditions and start getting stuff because I think I might have something. And so, but of course, agents don't take you on. The top agents don't take you on because you're a nobody. So you end up going with people that are very, very close to essentially being extra agents, background artist agents.
Yeah.
So I was with one of them and did the audition and it went really well and I got it and I was like, I've got the part. And it was a complete disaster because it was just titillation. And the fact of the matter is that we all like a laugh at this, don't we? We all like to laugh, but there are victims that are still, have horrible stories to tell about these grotesque people, and playing them in this sordid ITV3 kind of way. It's not something I'm proud of at all.
No. And it's sort of insulting to get the part, isn't it? Someone said, I think we found our Fred West.
That's the thing. They said there was another guy who was nailed on, but you came in and you took it away from him. And I thought, ooh. Thanks very much. I've got better serial killer vibes than that. Dominic West was Fred West as well. So, I'm on a par with him. Let's just...
Yeah, that's what I think. I would agree with that. Right, there's a thing I want to ask you about. This is something I talked with Adam Buxton about last week. I've discovered I have a disability that I didn't know my whole life had, in that my mind's eye is blind.
Right.
Okay. I cannot see images inside my head.
Okay.
If I close my eyes, and I didn't realize this, I just always assumed I was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought twice about it.
Okay.
If you close your eyes and are asked to visualize an apple, say, what do you see? Do you see a three-dimensional apple? Do you see it?
I see it. And it's a really nice, it's like a nice juicy one.
And is it colour? Is it red,
it's,
green apple?
It's one of those that have a bit of red and a bit of green.
Yeah. So you can see colour, three dimensions.
Yeah.
Can you twirl it round? Can you twirl it round if you want to in your head?
Yeah. It's twirling around in midair now.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's good. I see if I do it, I see absolutely nothing.
No, that's very
true. Aphantasia, it's called.
Oh.
That's what I've got. And I've so discovered at 52 years of age that I have a disability. If I'm thinking of faces,
yeah,
it's almost like I can get like, oh, my watch is trying to join in on this conversation now. It's like I can get a sort of almost a flash of them. So like if I'm thinking of my daughter, I can get the feeling of it, but it's not really an image. Oh. I can dream.
Yeah.
And that's fine, I think. But otherwise, I just think in an internal monologue. Some people don't have an internal monologue. Do you have an internal monologue?
Yeah, I do. That's
cool. I don't think I'm going to be interviewing anyone who doesn't. I can't imagine anyone who doesn't have an internal monologue has any kind of creative ability.
No. I think my internal monologue is, depending on where I am in my career, it can be really, it can be quite dark at times, in terms of...
Yep.
Maybe you're not really that good. Maybe you should carry on being a copywriter.
Yeah, well, we've all got that. I mean, I have that voice. So I talked to Robin Ince about this, which because that was more about what whereabouts your internal voice is located in your head is quite interesting. And that varies for people where it is and whether it's. But certainly I have a malicious, more on stage than anywhere else, kind of, and especially midway through a tour when I know something very well, I have a malicious voice trying to fuck me up. On stage, trying to make me say, "What if you forget how to breathe or speak?"
Yes,
trying to make that happen. Basically, so I have a sprite within me that does that, an internal voice. Usually, my internal voice is me.
Yes,
I do a lot of stuff about the division of personality.
Yes,
within my work, but I think I've only got one actual voice inside there. Some people have different voices.
Yeah, well, I think I've only done stand up about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
although they've gone reasonably well, most of the time I'm just saying things like, "What if you can't walk? what if you? I know you've remembered every single word you're about to say, but what if you suddenly forget?" Too much self-doubt in there for me to ever be relaxed, I think.
Well, I find that with acting, though, it's very rare that I'm much more nervous about doing acting than I'm about anything else because I don't do it very often, I guess. Right. So,
it's reversed for me. I love acting.
Yeah. You guys are good. The guys you work with, all that team of people that we've done stuff recently, we did a short film recently called Mosquito, in which had swapped places with a prostitute. And of course, the phone, when there was a part of a man who goes to a prostitute, my phone starts ringing. Those are the parts I get. So in the first film, I was a doctor. I've never been asked to be a doctor in my life, but I was asked to be a prostitute, a man who goes to prostitutes, whatever they're called. I don't know because I don't go to prostitutes.
No.
So I don't know why I'm the fucking go-to guy to go to prostitutes. But you were playing a man who'd been bitten by a mosquito that had just bitten a prostitute and you'd changed personalities with the prostitute.
This was a director's idea, Ben Malaby. Who's very, very talented director. And he came up with the idea of a mosquito that bit one person and bit another person. And by doing that, swapped their identities. So that's essentially what it is. So so there's a guy, and Alice Lowe was in it as well, which was totally bizarre. Very much like when I first met you.
Not the second time, though. Not the second time.
Second time.
When I was in that film.
Rich is here.
Yeah, there he is.
He's raking up. So it has a particular kind of vibe going on because I think there are only about 5 shots. We kind of just let stuff go on in it. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah.
It's really good. But
It is very good. I watched it again today, actually. It's very good.
Yeah, I think it would just divide people, wouldn't it? I mean, that's the funny thing is that since I've had a sort of bona fide success in doing this kind of political satire, I'm very hesitant to say, "Oh, look at all this weird stuff I did in the past." I'm not sure it would go down well, but Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, the things you're doing in the Mash Report and on your own are still, they're not like mainstream, I don't think. So I think people would still go for that stuff. And it's interesting. I mean, I just think this is a very interesting career projection in lots of ways, in that you've stuck with it, which is a lot of people might not have done.
But
you've been working enough and you've been creative enough to make all this stuff over the years. And it is all very different. It's very different kinds of things, and the funny stuff's very funny. The weird stuff's very weird. I think it all works. The good thing for the BBC about the 10 tips about going to interviews with BBC, which is just that's very very funny all the way through, and a little bit weird. But that's that's what you have. So I think like the good thing about having something that becomes a hit, I would imagine, is that then people go back to your other stuff and go, oh no, that, you know, look at this crazy thing. What about this great thing? Oh, I don't like this thing. But you know what is, it's amazing that you have that massive body of work. I don't think most people would have.
No,
like most actors don't have the that kind of drive, I think, to be creative as well. Or they don't have, or if they're not writers as well, then they don't get the opportunity to do
it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The bizarre thing is that I can't think of a day where I didn't have an idea for something. Yeah, I just wanted to. I just constantly want to write all the time. And if I can think of something that I could do quickly, because you know what Twitter's like, it's a platform. It's right there. Since they introduced the video that you can just play, there it is. It's right there, and that's given me all my success so far. I just persevere. It is easy to kind of give up hope because, you know, so many different kinds of rejections along the way. The awful thing of kind of going through all the different levels and then getting finally to like the head of the network who just goes, man, and that's 18 months of,
Or goes yes, and then moves to another job 2 days later, and then you have to do the whole process again, and the next guy doesn't want you. So that's it's very frustrating. So you know, similarly with you, I don't think I'm as creative as you are, but you know, it's making that decision just to take that into your own hands and make the stuff you're going to make, which is interesting. Yeah. So let's move on to it. Let's talk about The Room Next Door. I mean, did you think when you came up with that this was going to be the thing that exploded in that way?
No, not at all.
What was the process was it just a one-off thing that you then thought, oh, I can do that again, or was it?
Yeah, it was a one-off thing simply because the first one I did was with Boris Johnson, who just kept leaving gaps. Rather than answer a question like a human being, he just kept wrestling this kind of internal thing, shall I tell the truth? Shall I lie? Shall I just go blah, 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 you know? And I just thought, oh, I could pretend to be somebody next door. It's as simple as that. And I didn't think about ever doing it again. But then I think it might have been the day after or 2 days after the Dalai Lama in the interview where he said that he doesn't mind there being a female Dalai Lama as long as she's attractive and wears lots of makeup.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody sent that to me on Twitter and said, you could do A Room Next Door for that. And I thought, yeah, I suppose I could, really, couldn't I? And I just kind of put my box files back and just did another one.
Yeah.
And it's just so simple. And then it kind of snowballed after that. So perhaps if the Dalai Lama hadn't done that ridiculous interview,
then
maybe it wouldn't have happened. I don't know.
Well, it's sort of because it's once you've had the idea, which isn't like, again, it's not an obvious idea. That's why people have taken to it. But once you've had the idea, you suddenly go, fuck, pretty much everything. Certainly in this modern political age, pretty much every interview or speech is someone stumbling their way through. I mean, so many people, fuck him, and obviously Donald Trump, Priti Patel, all these people making terrible mistakes. And then it's lovely because the character just builds, and you know, there are sort of flights of fancy and weirder things within it.
Yeah, there are
than just the simple thing. So again, you are using that what you've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
You are using it in this idea that then has blossomed in this way.
Yeah.
I was interested to see that you just after I didn't book you because of this, but just after I booked you this morning,
yes,
I saw the news about you being on James Corden kind of came through.
Yeah,
which I was always surprised that because obviously you're working on the MASH report.
Yeah.
I was always did the MASH report not. Go, they, can we do this on the MASH report, or did you not want to do it on the MASH report?
I did talk about it, and there was a time when I was doing a few Room Next Doors at the same time that the MASH report was on, and I kept missing certain deadlines. So when I was ready to get something, because I was still working, remember, so I was kind of jotting down what I could in the evening. And so by the time I had a script written and ready to go and filmed, it was like a week late. So it didn't really chime very well. And at the same time, I think from a studio perspective, I cut a lot and I don't leave gaps for laughter. It seems like it wouldn't really fit a studio setup in a way.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you see, I think that's what's interesting. And it goes back to this lockdown thing now, in that obviously all the shows and including the MASH report which you're in are working in lockdown and don't have an audience. And actually I saw Saturday Night Live this week, and on the Weekend Report they tried to sort of fake an audience by getting some of their mates on audio to laugh, and it was so distracting. And you kind of go, no, actually people at home don't necessarily need that. And it's, and me watching you on Twitter and me watching you on the MASH report, I don't think is that bigger difference. Maybe there's a studio audience might laugh over it. So it's got in James Corden. How did this happen that you got on the James Corden show?
James Corden and his producer Ben Winston, they just emailed me out of the blue and said, "Your stuff's really good. Would you like to put it on Late Late Show?" It was because of the way Trump is doing these daily briefings and descending further and further into madness and hysteria, really. So, you know, I thought, what an opportunity that is. And they were so quick and so with it and efficient and also, you know, really friendly and really helpful.
Yeah.
It was just a bizarre thing to just go, right, let's do it. There's the contract, sign there. Fine. Could you do it Monday? Fine. We'll put it out Tuesday. Bang. It was done. It was over. That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you see, again, it's interesting because, again, watching Saturday Night Live, and it's always a bit variable, that show. I like watching it. But they seem to, you know, I think like most people go, right, we're doing a sketch, which I think the MASH report did really well, especially the first week. I thought was absolutely excellent. John Oliver, I think, is doing really well with it. But you think, oh, look, it's sort of a handicap, but it's also this amazing opportunity to create interesting comedy. Something like what you're doing is immediately would work. It's a man on his own in a room, and so it's lockdown. You know, it is a lockdown sketch. But so many people are just doing Zoom conferences or the most obvious thing you would do.
Yeah.
And so you have this ready-made thing basically to go.
I do,
that can go into lockdown comedy that works and doesn't feel like, oh, they're struggling to come up with an idea.
Yes.
Because that isn't how it was created. So it's really interesting. But you would also think, Saturday Night Live with that talent behind it would think maybe they will do if they do more of them. Maybe they'll think a bit more outside the box and try and create something.
Yeah, I think that probably is. The longer it goes on, the more people will kind of adapt to it. But, you know, with something like Saturday Night Live, you could get props, costumes and sets delivered to them directly. And they could, you know, and it is the thing is you are a one person crew. So I had to do MASH report sketches earlier today. And it really is just stuff like, right. I wonder if I'll just tell you a sketch that's coming, which is spoiler alert. just a quick news desk piece about, football's now going to be played on the moon. So the idea is that they talk to a football fan who's in a rocket ready to go. So it just said football fan in rocket. And I was like, what am I going to do here? I've got no idea what I'm going to do. So you just kind of had to use your imagination a bit more, but it was good because it had nothing to do with webcams and Zoom and all of that. And that kind of looking at people's living rooms and slightly jarring signal. And I do think there is so much you could do to make the most of it.
Yeah, but it's only a sketch with one person. I suppose, like, if you're really used to working in a group of people, but, like, I don't know, you would just think Saturday Night Live would jump at it and go, this is an amazing opportunity. And I was really impressed with them. I love the MASH report anyway, but I was really impressed with that, how Nish and everyone has got that show together so quickly, and it really worked. Yeah. Good. Let me ask you some emergency questions.
Oh, this is a dream come true.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you some new ones. I might ask
you emergency questions. And now I'm actually being asked on it. It's quite a surreal moment.
I might ask you some. Okay, this is one I like. The question's funnier than any answer you can give, though, so don't worry about it. Fine. Over the last few months, I've watched every episode of How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
What is the most degrading thing you've done to yourself for no apparent reason? I've watched every single episode of it.
Okay, well, along those lines...
Don't like it.
You don't like it? You didn't know?
No, I hated it from the start.
I can see that. Well, along those lines, I bought... purely for my own, only nostalgic reasons, I bought all of Quantum Leap.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I watched all of them. they're just so bad, Rich. They're just so bad. But
they are bad.
The concept just really spoke to me. It still does.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I love the concept.
Love the concept. If you, anything that comes out of Dean Stockwell's mouth now is very Me Too-y.
Yes.
So his character's over.
That's true with How I Met Your Mother. How I Met Your Mother is not old enough for it to be this case, but the womanizer character in How I Met Your Mother, which ended in 2014, it's a recent series, he films women having sex with them without their permission.
Yeah.
He's tricking women into bed with them. He dumps them straight away.
We're supposed to laugh, aren't we?
That's... Yeah, yeah. And he's meant to be charming and funny, and he is, you know. It's just so awful. Disgraceful.
Well,
Quantum Leap. My problem with Quantum Leap, which is my problem with all of these types of show, is that if you change one thing in history, you're going to change everything. So going back and altering one thing to make that good for that particular person and that works out, we'll fuck things up down the line for somebody else.
Yeah.
And if the series, what the series should be, is him solving something for somebody and then having to go to somebody else to make up for the way that has
a
domino effect has fucked up the next relationship.
The reason I laugh is because I had exactly the same thought. because when Al wasn't using his hologramic image to spy on young women, he would say at the end, "Well done, Sam. This person and that person, they get married and they have three kids. Off you go." But it doesn't say what happened to those three kids. One of those kids might have caused a terrible bus crash. Anyway, that's
just... And also, if three new people are alive in the world, then that totally changes the world. But, you know, one action. I mean, I don't want to talk to you about sliding doors.
Oh, yeah.
But I won't. I'll ask you another. I'm going to ask you another emergency question. Yeah. If you're in hospital, this is a topical question. This might happen. Yep. If you're in hospital, would you prefer to die than be Patch Adams'd? A lot of people having to make this decision in hospitals up and down the country now.
Cracky.
Have you seen Patch Adams?
I haven't seen. I'm aware of Patch Adams.
You're aware of what it is.
Would it mean Robin Williams himself, or is it...
I mean, that's an interesting question, because I think... No, I did write that after he died. I guess if by being Patch Adams, you brought back to life Robin Williams, that might be a sacrifice worth making, again. If you change history in that way, though, Michael, what will the knock-on effects be of that as well?
I don't know. Ask Al the hologram. He's currently at Lady's changing room.
Okay. Let me see. No, I'm not going to ask you that.
Okay.
That question is basically what we were just talking about. Oh, what do you think is the enduring appeal of dressing up as the 118 running men from those old 118 adverts that still happens? If you go to a marathon, people still dress up those guys, even now. It's an easy costume, I guess, but is it as funny to dress up like that as anyone who does it thinks it is?
Well, this is interesting, actually. I won't reveal the person, but I do know one of the original 118, and it's very, very lucrative. So I can see why
Yeah,
I would see why he would want to come back and keep.
Well, I'm not got a problem with him carrying on doing that if he wishes. I mean, if they bring the advert, I don't think the adverts are still running, but if they came back, and no pun intended, I'm sure he would go back to doing that. It's the people who just think it's because all you're doing is dressing as an advert character.
Yeah,
and it's not that funny. Even Gio Campari, that's a funny character dressed as him.
I would agree. I don't think there's anything enduring about it, but I'm not sure if there's anything enduring about any kind of dressing up in that respect. Is there?
Wow.
Is there
sometimes a costume
and think that's quite funny.
Sometimes a costume can be very funny if it's no one's done it, if it's topical. I'm struggling to think of an example. But sometimes someone might come up with something. I think it's just the, even if you were the first person to think, I'll run a marathon dressed as the 118 guys with my friend who'll be dressed as the 118 guy, people will see and go, oh, fuck, you're the guy, you're like the guys from the advert.
The advert.
First time.
Yeah.
Mildly amusing.
Yeah.
The 500th time in 2020 where you will still see it.
Yeah.
Is it just that paucity of imagination? Just think I've got to run dressed as something. 118 guys. I was in a town centre and there were like 8 guys dressed as 118 guys out on presumably a stag night or something.
Yeah. That again, that doesn't require much imagination.
No, but also.
They never do they?
They don't, but imagine being the guys getting married in that awful situation.
I suppose it's a bit like Reservoir Dogs in as much as, you know, if you wear the same thing, nobody knows which one you are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're the same person, if you're dressed the same, then it's a group embarrassment, but you're all anonymous.
And it gives the least attractive person an equal chance of having sex with someone.
Well, there is that. Yeah.
Because basically you're all the same suddenly.
Yeah.
And so it's good for, if you're maybe the least attractive person in any group of guys, says, hey, why don't we all dress up as the 118 guys tonight?
Yeah.
It'd be great. And then it's a level playing field for that night.
Exactly.
And then a girl goes, oh, you're the 118 guys. That's fun. Or guy says, you're the 118 guys. I love that. That's funny. And then they've all got an equal chance of scoring with that person who finds that amusing.
Yeah.
And it's a way of making sure the dullest and stupidest people breed with each other as well, I guess.
Oh, there is that as well. Yeah.
Sort of. Is that eugenics or the reverse of eugenics? I don't know. Okay, I'm not saying anyone should be killed.
I'm not saying, no, I'm glad you're not saying.
I'm not going that far.
No, all right.
I had a big glass of whiskey at the start and I said I wasn't going to drink it all.
No.
But I have drunk. I went downstairs and I thought, I'll have a little, I wasn't drinking this week, I'm going to have a drink of whiskey. And I thought, I'll just put a double in just in case, so I don't have to go downstairs again. But I went and then thought, oh, it's a lot of whiskey.
Mm.
But it's not, that looks like a normal amount of whiskey now.
It does now, yes.
Yeah, which means I've drunk quite a lot of whiskey.
It does.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you had to have sex with either... Do you remember the TV show Rainbow?
I do.
You're too young for that.
Okay. No.
If you had to have sex with either Zippy, Bungle, George, Jeffrey, or Rod, whilst Jane and Freddie had sex with each other next to you, but you couldn't join in with that, if you had to, which of the Rainbow crew would you have sex with? Is that Zippy, Bungle, George, Jeffrey, or Rod?
Okay, give me a minute.
Okay, it's worth thinking it all through properly. You don't want to just blurt something out and then regret that for the rest of your life.
George.
Yeah. That's disgusting. I think I've all of them.
Blue eyes.
I know, but he's a child. He's a child hippopotamus.
Were they children? I thought they were just...
I mean, essentially, if he isn't a child, he's got the mind of a child, and that's probably worse than having sex with a child. No, it isn't as bad as having sex with a child. Okay, I'll ask you another question to get out of that embarrassment.
Yeah.
Okay. If you didn't... I've just realised this is live. I can't even edit the awful things out I say.
You can't.
George is a girl. It's not a girl. George isn't a girl. If you didn't have to have sex with either Zippy, Bungle, George, Jeffrey or Rod, or Jane or Freddie, who would now be asleep, but they all said they were up for it if you fancied it, though not an orgy, it would have to be one-on-one, would you have sex with one of them and which one?
So, sorry.
The difference is you don't have to have sex with them now, and Freddie and Jane are asleep, so that's not going to be in the equation. But if you didn't have to have sex, but they said they were up for it if you wanted to, which one would you have sex with one of them in that situation? It's a very different question. Because the first question was if you had to have sex with one of them. But now you don't have to, but you can choose to if you want to. And would that change your choice?
No, I think I'd probably give it a miss.
Okay. Good. I'm very glad to get those questions sorted out. They were on sort of midsection of emergency questions, which is available from Go Faster Stripe in its new paperback form. With 25 additional questions. Look at that. Got a lat. It's you can go on this. Look, you can, there it is. Oh, no, there. Oh, yeah. Hold it up to the camera. Yeah. Looks nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks really nice.
A perfect way to pretend you're interested in people you're not that interested in. Kathy Burke. Kathy Burke likes the book.
Oh, Kathy Burke.
Amazing. Amazing. Cool. Are you having a nice time?
Who, me?
How are you coping with the lockdown that we're currently in? We haven't. And we did talk a little bit about before the.
Yeah, we did, and I was just. I basically said that I was able to resign from my job as a copywriter.
Yeah,
and I was able to have a week without my children here. To just work right at home 9 to 3, which was the dream, the absolute dream. And it was a wonderful, wonderful week. And I achieved a lot and I got a lot written. And now I'm homeschooling. So now I'm writing in the evening and teaching my children English, maths, and how to play the piano, which is not really.
No, and you're not getting any money for. Being, you know, employed by anyone, which if you'd stayed in your job, you might still have got your wage, right?
That it, yes.
Yeah.
But luckily, I've got a few things going on with deadlines, which is focusing me. And I was on the Late Late Show last night. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
It's picking up. It's picking up.
Yeah.
I mean, I find, see, like, when I'm writing, and maybe I write less prodigiously than you, there's a lot of time spent. Doing anything but writing. And so at the moment, I'm looking after the kids Tuesdays and Thursdays and working Mondays and Wednesdays and vice versa with my wife. And then on Friday, we just have a fist fight in the morning. Whoever wins gets to have that day. And then we're taking the weekend with the family, which is nice. And there's lots of really nice things about it. But like on Monday, I was really tired and I couldn't get anything done at all. I got nowhere at all. But I think in a way, having limited amount of time might suit me in that half an hour before lunch, I become very prodigious and get loads done. In fact, to the point lunch is at 12 o'clock and 11:45, I start really writing and then I have to go downstairs whilst I'm in the middle of doing something. But I think if I could do that every day I'm working, that would be enough. That's 15 minutes a day. But it sounds like you work much more consistently than that.
No, I like to... No? I like to do like hours and hours of writing. I've got like two projects on the go, so I've been kind of having to divvy them up. On top of just keeping an eye on the news and doing new room next doors when they come up, because when Priti Patel had her disastrous briefing, my mentions went completely, you know, ballistic. There were like thousands of people saying you've got to do one. And I just haven't had time, but you know, I know it's something I really should do, just to keep the momentum going a little bit. So every day is just insanely, insanely busy. But I do really like it that way. I think it's good.
Yeah. Do you regret having children, or do you think it was a good thing in the but on balance? I mean, obviously, mainly awful.
You know what it's like. You know what it's like when you just go, oh, you know what? We shouldn't have had him. Every now and again, you say, well, we shouldn't have had him, really, because we could have done stuff.
Well, that's what, just for the lockdown. I mean, the irony is I'm kind of loving it.
Yeah.
But also, I just sort of think, God, at this time, my life isn't this different usually. Mm. But at this time, if we didn't have kids, I could be reading, could be just watching telly. Yeah. Like, people are sending me memes. You know, like, my mother-in-law sent a meme this week. We were talking about her memes last week.
Okay.
Sent me a meme about, I can't even remember what it was, but it was basically implying, you know, we're doing fuck all for 3 weeks. And she sent it to us. And you go, we're looking after two fucking kids, homeschooling them, looking after them all the time with no help from anyone, yeah, and trying to do a job. We're not, this isn't a time to be lazy. But if I didn't have kids, I could work, I could read.
Yeah.
I could.
However, I should actually point out that,
yeah,
before children, you know, I was writing and doing stuff. After children, I just got so much more focused. I was just writing more, and I seemed to be producing. I think it might have been because when I entered my 40s, actually, I don't think I was producing particularly, you know, reams and reams of great stuff in my 30s or my 20s. I think when I got to my 40s, I just grew up a bit more. The actual focus on the writing and writing decent stuff, yeah, it really changed after children. You know, so I'd just like to qualify that yes, I absolutely do love and adore my children. I'd do anything for them, yes.
Yeah, good, of course. That'd be, but if you could be in a sliding door situation where one reality you have kids and one reality you don't, and you can switch between the two, that would be the best, wouldn't it?
That is the ideal scenario. with John Hannah occasionally,
yeah,
popping,
yeah,
in.
But what if you had a sliding door situation and you went to the other reality and you had four kids rather than, I think, believe you have two kids? And well, so, you know, you care for what you wish for, because you might not get. There's an infinite amount of alternate universes out there, and you might get one where it's actually true. Harder.
Well, I'm one of five children, and I know.
Oh,
it was, yeah, and I know it was pretty tough.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine how my parents had three kids. I can't imagine they cope with that. I can't imagine how anyone who's a single parent copes with.
No.
Certainly lockdown, but like if they've got two or three kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable the way that, talking of you having lots of family, then I hope any of these people are your family. Are you ever mistaken for Michael Spicer, the Norwich based architect?
No.
Are you ever mistaken for Michael Spicer, the Tory grandee who died in 2019?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'm often mistaken for him.
Okay.
And what's very spooky about that is that he died, and then exactly 1 month later, I did my first Room Next Door.
Right.
It's almost like the universe can only deal with one famous person, Michael Spicer.
Yeah, maybe. Do you think you're in some way... he reincarnated inside you and he created the Room Next Door?
No, because in many ways we're polar opposite Michael Spicer.
Yeah.
He founded the ERG.
Yeah.
You know, he set up the whole path to UKIP and modern bigotry as we know it now. and I'm on the other side.
Yeah.
Not changing political landscape at all, but making very funny
But he would know what was going on. Maybe he came back and said, you know what really was going on, Michael, was there was people in the next room telling him all about the speeches. Maybe he did it. Have you seen that there is a meme, you may have created it, I don't know, of Hitler finding out that you are, Michael Spicer's videos are parodies. Have you seen that?
The guy who made that sent that to me.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, you know, that's nice. Thank you very much. But I was a bit befuddled because I thought, we don't do those anymore, do we?
That was one of my thoughts of it. I mean, it's sort of like a bit late, but then it's almost so late that it's good again.
I thought maybe he was trying to bring it back. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, I think he's definitely trying to bring it back.
I mean, can we now do that with, like, can we be nostalgic for old memes? I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. You won the Chortle Internet Award this year.
Yeah, you told me that. Thanks.
Yeah. That's all right. I'm sorry that I broke it to you on Twitter. I thought you would know. I've won. I've won five of those.
So. Have you?
Yeah.
Terrific. Have you actually got the awards? Did they send you the awards?
Sure. Yeah. I'll have a look. Hold on. Wait there. Okay. I'll show you what they look like. Hold on.
All right, cool.
I'll get them. They're literally just over here.
All right.
I should have come prepared.
Yeah.
Here they are. Look how many awards I've got. It's amazing. Brilliant. Now, because there was no award ceremony this year, was there?
No, there was no award either. I haven't got one.
No. So that's 2011.
That's nice.
There we go. Yep. Yeah. That was for As It Occurs to Me. That's 2012. That's just for Richard being Richard Herring Internet Awards.
Oh, you've got the Internet Awards. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I've got five Internet Awards, so I'm quite annoyed anyone else has won these. I think I won the first five. There's 2013. That one, my daughter knocked that off table.
Yeah. I think the law of averages suggests that if you have five glass awards and a child, one of them's going to break.
So that was 2013. That was for Rahala Stapa, which you're now in.
Yep.
And then 14 and 18. I had a little time off and then they've changed them to that.
All right.
And now.
Yeah. Well, I've got one of those.
Yeah.
Officially, but there's nothing that actually. There's nothing physical that suggests I haven't done it.
That's a shame. That's a shame. But I hope they will, when I die, which might be soon, I hope they'll call it the Richard Herring Internet Award, because it should be called that. I've got five of them. It should be called that already.
Yeah, they should. Yeah,
I shouldn't have to die. But well done on winning that. It was a very strong field, I thought, which very when strong. I won them, to be honest, it wasn't.
Can you name anyone who
I can't remember. Oh, I think probably people, because there's all the people who started early, basically, which is not many people.
Answer me this, maybe.
Yeah, probably answer me this. Probably Stuart Goldsmith. Probably Peacock and Gamble, or whatever he was doing early on.
Gamble, yeah.
Maybe Ricky Gervais. I think I beat a couple of people. I thought, oh, I'm surprised about that. Steve Coogan might be there 1 year.
Right.
But I kind of wanted everyone to win, and I didn't think you would win. Because it's voted for by the public and James Acaster and Ed Gamble are up. So I thought, they're going to win.
Yeah.
And I love that show. I've just been on that show. They're very rude young men.
Mm.
But I still love the show. And I just assumed that their fans would bulk vote.
Yeah.
So and Do the Right Thing and Inside the Comedian, that's a husband and wife competing against each other. So in a way, I think you winning was the most beautiful thing that
could happen. Yeah, I'm glad to I'm glad to have just won, really, Richard. Glad to have won, yeah.
It's nice. It's a shame there wasn't an award ceremony and stuff to go to.
No, or as I stress this, or an award. It's fine.
Well, maybe you'll send one through. You might be reviewing tonight's show. maybe it's time for him to send that through. Very good. I'll do a couple more emergency questions. We might go back old school just for. I've got some more stuff to talk about, I think, but let's look early. Here's a question I haven't asked, and someone just made a meme of this, which was it was too disgusting to retweet.
Right.
Would you rather date a man who is a 6 foot tall penis? I'm sorry, it's sexual base.
Yes.
Or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man there. This is something you've clearly thought about. I can see from the gleeful reaction that. Either a man who's a 6 foot tall penis, he's got a face on his bell end, but is otherwise just a massive penis.
Massive.
Possibly his balls are his feet.
Yeah, so he shuffles. But no, the other one.
The other one, you'd have the tiny man down there.
Yeah.
Any reasoning for that?
It's just such an absolutely grotesque thing to think about. And I suppose the reason why you persist with that question is because you can't visualize it, can you?
No, I can't see it in my head. So,
Richard, it's absolutely disgusting. So
I'm trying to think of it.
Why? No.
See, if my eyes are open, I can get more than if my eyes are closed, but only it's still only the ghostly. I'm trying to think of there was an MP that I can't remember who it was.
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Who was the person who made me think of that question?
Yes.
Who just looked like a 6 foot tall penis?
He did, but in my mind's eye, I'm thinking of something very, very detailed and disgusting, and I just can't.
There's nothing disgusting about the human penis. It's a beautiful thing, and a 6 foot tall version with sentience would be wonderful.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a ghost, Michael Spicer?
That's the question people want to know. These are all the great legendary questions I was hoping I'd be asked. No.
You got four siblings. Has any of your siblings ever seen a ghost?
No, they haven't. I'm sure they would have told me. The only thing I can think of is Vic Reeves wrote about actually meeting a ghost,
right?
In his autobiography.
Did he?
It always stayed with me that, because it was like the only serious part of the book.
he met a ghost.
He is deadly serious about some sort of flash when he was young. And he describes it in vivid detail, and he keeps reiterating how it genuinely happened, and he isn't joking.
Right.
So you might want to talk to him about that next time.
Well, I should ask him. I'm sure I have asked him, and he didn't answer it. And when Nick Frost was on quite recently, last year, I just read his autobiography, and there's an amazing story. I mean, he mentions a ghost early on, and then later on, there's a whole chapter about him and Simon Pegg going to a hotel that's burnt down, an old burnt down hotel, and there's bells. They've still got that old bell system, and a bell keeps ringing. And they go into the room, and then there's a burnt child, like looking at them, the eyes looking at him, and they run away. And I said, "Have you ever seen?" I know you've got an answer to this. Have you ever seen a ghost? And he started telling the other story. And then I thought, it seems so unlikely the other story was written. Was it just one time I had a dream that happened, or we wrote a sketch where that happened or something? Yeah. But someone else said, why did not ask Nick Frost about the burnt child in the hotel? Because you'd think if someone asked that question, you'd go, oh, yeah, there was that time. I forgot about the time I saw an actual fucking ghost with a whole plot of a ghost story in it. They might have been, you know, smoking some of the old wacky marijuanas understand they might have been into.
No, I don't believe in them, but I like a good ghost story, but no, I don't.
It's mainly mental people who have seen them, so be glad that it's almost now just a test. I could ask, are you insane? But the problem is most insane people think they are sane.
Yeah.
But if you ask, have you ever seen a ghost? It's a clever question for that reason, because if they say yes, then you know immediately they are insane.
Yep.
Having said that, I've seen a few ghosts myself, but that's different. That's different when it's me. What's the question that Ashlyn B? Was Ashlyn B got really stuck on this question? It's because I haven't really written it down or phrased. Let me just check if I've got it in the back. I'm for people that are at home watching live. I'm referencing things that have not happened yet. Who is the most famous person that you have been in a lift with, but that you didn't get into the lift with? It's not like I got in the lift with Nish Kumar when I was going to the MASH report.
Right.
You've got into a lift, allow an elevator or any form of stair. And you got in, and there's a famous person in the lift already. And have you ever been? I met Jeremy Paxman in the lift at the BBC. And I touched his briefcase.
Well, I.
You didn't know.
I did work at ITV Sport.
Right. Well, there you go.
And they used to be on the 18th floor of the, what's it called? The
London Studios?
London Studios. I always call it the LWT building.
Yeah.
I was always in elevators with famous people. That's just.
Who was the most famous? Just tell me the most famous one. Don't like tell me I've been with loads. I asked you a specific question. I want to know. That's good.
There you go.
Yeah. Impressed with that.
She was so nice because it was packed, this lift. And she did her utmost to create room.
Oh, that's nice. I thought she'd put on a little play school show or something, you were gonna say. Or she did all her catchphrases or stuff. She seems nice, Viola Benjamin.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, again, that's very much a name from my childhood. She's a late dame or something now, isn't she?
Well, no, she's a lady in the House of Lords.
House of Lords, is she? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good luck to her.
Even be a baroness, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll look it up later. And if you could have any one item from any museum or art gallery in the world, you're allowed to take it home and keep it. Anything, anywhere in the world. It can be a historical artifact. It can just be a thing. It can be a painting. It can be a sculpture. You're allowed to keep it. Which one thing are you going to take from any museum in the world and have?
Sunflowers. I'd take Van Gogh sunflowers.
But he did loads of those. Which one do you want?
I'd pick the one that my dad has spent his entire life recreating.
Okay. With paint or with sunflowers? How does your dad recreate it?
I didn't. Yes. No. He paints. He basically paints perfect recreations of Van Gogh pictures, and the sunflowers is like up there.
Okay. I mean, that's slightly insulting to your dad that you've taken Van Gogh's sunflowers when you could just have taken one of your dad's copies of the sunflowers if they're any
good.
Yeah,
but I feel like you know, he's a very moral, upstanding man, but I'm sure if I said, I've got the real one in the back of my Suzuki, would you like to come and see it? He'd probably go,
yeah.
But make sure you take it back. So.
Yeah. But you're allowed to have it. All the museums of the world have got together and said, Michael, we so admire The Room Next Door and Mosquito and The Last Days of Quant.
And the Fred West thing.
We loved you in that Fred West thing. You can have one. We've all just agreed you can have one thing.
It was a bit
it's not
salacious.
Stolen.
Let me just say, Michael, it was a bit salacious. However,
we sensed from your performance that you were embarrassed by that, and that's why we let it go, because we thought at least the actor looks embarrassed to be in this.
What? I didn't even mention the fact that they gave me a curly wig and I had large curly hair. So they basically put a big curly wig on my curly hair.
Yeah.
And it was too big. It was just too big. Oh, God, ridiculous. Anyway, so that's,
That's nice. Is it your dad's version of the sunflowers good, would you say, or are they...
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
Are they as good as...
He is, I mean, he's retired now, he's 86.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yes. And he was a greengrocer in Dagenham his entire, entire working life. But the whole time I was growing up, there would just be these massive, massive Van Gogh pictures in our tiny flat. And they're just absolutely amazing. So that was the first thing I thought of.
Did you ever consider saying to your dad, why don't you paint something that's your own idea, mate? Stop copying Van Gogh.
Well, first of all...
Do a picture of some... What?
I'd never call my dad mate, for a start. Would you call your dad mate?
No, but, it wouldn't suit. No one calls my dad mate. No.
He does do it from time to time, but I would never say, you know what, give that Van Gogh, knock it on the head.
Do you want me to give him a ring and say, I've heard about the sunflowers and I just think, move on. It's been covered by someone else.
No, I wouldn't advise you to talk to my dad. No, I wouldn't advise you to do that at all.
Okay, just if you want me to help. If he's a greengrocer, why then he could do different vegetables and stuff. That's why I'd say, do some sprouts.
Because he hated being a greengrocer.
Sorry, I won't. I've thought it through, and I think ringing your dad to accuse him of copying Van Gogh and moving on to sprouts, probably not going to do it.
You know, we never sold these paintings. Never sold them. We just gave them.
Who's that, your dad or Van Gogh? Is that your dad or Van Gogh?
Van Gogh sold more paintings than
your dad
did of Van Gogh paintings.
Yeah. Mm. Well, maybe after this you could put them on eBay and we could see if anyone wants to buy. Would he like to sell some?
No, I think I'd like to assemble them all at some point and put them in my own special gallery.
That's lovely.
Yeah. And I'll get you to say gallery.
You get me to I come and open up and go, what a fucking waste of a man's life this has been to copy some existing paintings.
No, Richard, no.
I couldn't do that.
No, you couldn't do that, no.
I'm sensing.
You're not supposed to say the gallery, and then you can't.
I wouldn't be able to just do that. Especially if you gave me some whiskey before we went in.
Forget it.
I've not taken the job, just on the off chance. That sounds lovely. I'm sorry to have been offensive towards your father. I hope he's not watching. Is he on Twitch?
Is he on Twitch? No, he's not on Twitch. No.
Okay. I think my dad might be watching. If my dad started drawing pictures of Van Gogh, I'd tell him where to go. Also, he can't draw. He can't sing, my dad. Can your dad sing?
He's a great singer.
Yeah. No, my dad's a bad singer. He was a good dad in some ways, but, My wife can't sing. I didn't realise until I'd married her. She didn't really... She didn't sing until I married her, and then I married her and she started singing. And what can you do then?
Well,
there's no way out, is there?
No, that's it.
There's no way out.
It's over.
So it was very clever the way she did that.
So did she suddenly start singing on the
wedding? not on the night. She left it a little bit, but she got a guitar and then she started singing something, and it was so bad. And then I realised I'd never heard her sing. And you know what? I'm passing that on. And I didn't know about my, aphantasia, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It's aphraxia, whatever it is. And now, so our kids could not be able to imagine things or sing. And what kind of life is that?
Yeah, they're doomed.
Yeah. Terrible.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm sorry I was rude about your dad. It sounds good.
I'll send you some pictures. You'll be amazed.
It's all right. I've seen the original Van Gogh, so I don't need to see someone's copy of them. So if...
Richard, you do.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Okay. I'll have a look. I'm going to get one. And next week, it's going to be hanging up over those lights that need light shades.
Yeah.
So we're going to go in a sec because I know you've... It's 9:10. We've done more than we're contractually obliged to do. That's a weird thing that you've kicked work a week before this happened. You've got work coming in though, so that's okay. So you're doing work, so that I don't have to worry about you. That you're doing some writing, you're doing your TV shows.
Yeah.
Do you know what's coming up potentially in the future if the world ever returns to normal?
I've got a few things coming up. I mean, I was offered to do the sort of things that you've been offered to do.
Yeah.
So like comedians giving lectures and things like that. And I would, dearly love to do those. I am incredibly happy with my decision to do this because this is all I've ever wanted to do is write. I didn't bank on the rest of the world working from home at the same time as me. That's just the way it is. How lucky are we, Richard? How lucky?
We're very lucky. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years and not had to have any other jobs. So I'm very, very lucky. I think it's fascinating. I just think that's it's a fascinating thing because I don't think most people would, I remember when Angus Deaton became famous, he's an overnight success. And he'd literally been going for about 20 years at that point. He was like a man in his 40s. I think when he starts getting, have I got news for you? And people just don't see everything that's gone before. With you, you can go back and find most of it, which is also quite unusual.
Yeah.
But that journey, I think, it's both inspirational and really bad for loads of people who will think, oh, well, maybe if I stick at it for 20 years, then it'll all turn around. Because for most of them, it still won't. But it is an encouraging thing to know that if you stay true to what you're doing and stick at it, and you've got some talent and you've got the perspicacity to carry on.
What the most important things can thing to remember is that with the exception of a few people, what you do in your 20s and 30s isn't great. You're still learning. I know, Lena Dunham, is it Dunham? Dunham, Lena Dunham, doing Girls at 24 and writing these scripts. I couldn't have done that at 24. I was really just copying Chris Morris at 24. I was just, I was literally writing scripts called Round the Clock.
Yeah.
When the day-to-day was out and stuff like that. I wasn't doing good stuff back then. And it really is about just trying to find something original, an original, joke.
if only your dad felt the same as all, Rich, as all can of you, this.
Can you? So rude. It's not like I don't know this about you. You're this constant throughout my comedy landscape.
Well, it's nice. Well, hopefully you'll ask me to be in a film in about 14 years' time, I guess. That'd be good.
And it won't. Let's let you know, it won't do anything for your career.
Okay. As long as it's worse, it's progressively worse, because I started as a doctor, then I was a man who uses prostitutes and still has sex with a man, even though he doesn't want to, but still goes ahead with it.
Yeah.
And it has to be worse than that. It has to be an equal step downwards.
Okay.
For me to accept the role. Okay. But I think by that stage, I will be as low in my life as I can be.
Yeah. Well, you did show me your cracked Chortle Award.
I did.
That's quite low. So we'll kind of base it on that kind of character.
If you want, I'll send you the. I could send you the crack.
A fragment. Yeah,
please. I'll send you. Though it's quite sharp. I mean, it'd be ironic if, you know, someone was killed with that piece of that award, especially if it's me. Yeah. But look after my internet award for me when you get it, because it's all of them are mine, really.
The Richard Perry Memorial.
And thank you so much for coming on. I've wanted to get you on for ages, and. It was lovely to have you on this time. We'll be back next week with somebody else. I don't know who yet. You know, if I book as late as I did with you,
yeah.
Could be anyone, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be.
Whoever's on the front page of Chortle on that day, it'll be them. Good luck with everything. I hope we get through this difficult time, and you people at home as well. I hope you'll get through this difficult time. If in June you're listening to this, and as I suspect we're still in this difficult time, I hope we carry on getting through it. But thank you very much for doing this, and we will see you all very soon. I'll be back with some snooker tomorrow night, 7:30. It's a 32-player tournament about to start. You're going to meet some more me's very soon. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Michael Spicer! You have been listening to Rahalastapar with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Michael Spicer. Thank you to the people of Twitch. Thank you to the people of Zoom. Thank you to the people of Zencaster who helped us put all this together. I'm indebted to my friend and colleague, co-director of Sky Potato Limited, Chris Evans, not that one. I'm also indebted to this week's executive producer, who is Dink Taylor. I mean, what can I say? That's his name. We couldn't think of a nickname for him. We were just laughing at him being called Dink Taylor. We didn't need a nickname for him. Thank you to Pest, of course, for providing the music as ever, even in lockdown. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com. You can become a monthly badger. GoFasterStripe.com/badges. You can become someone who just buys some of my books or my trump cards or my downloads or my DVDs. They've also got a huge selection of fantastic shows from some of the most brilliant comedians in the world. So check them out. GoFasterStripe.com. Don't be an uncool kid. Be a cool kid, my fine friends. Goodbye. Go away.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.